Please proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, I'm Dimitri Glitzen, representing the King County Corrections Guild. I'd like to reserve 3.5 minutes.
No, 3 or 4.
Oh, I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for a rebuttal. Okay. I didn't know that rule. I apologize, Your Honor. We are the King County Corrections Guild was the defendant below and is the appellant on discretionary review in this court. I know you're familiar with the briefing in this case. I think the starting point to analyze this case has to be that one of the most fundamental principles of Washington law is that a client who loses confidence in his or her attorney may discharge that attorney with or without cause. And that necessarily includes a client who, like the King County Corrections Guild, loses confidence in its law firm, the law offices of Jared Karstetter, because the client comes to believe that the law firm or the lead attorney for the law firm has disclosed client confidences. And the law on that was well established even in 1925 when Wright versus Johansson, 132 Washington 682.
Dan, the Guild's position, you're expressly asking us not to decide the case on the basis of whether Mr. Karstetter was an employee of the Guild or an independent contractor.
Correct. We are assuming at this 12B motion that Mr. Karstetter alleges he was an employee working somehow under the framework of his law firm with his other employees, the law firm. But assuming that he was a common law employee, the law is absolutely clear that because of the personal and confidential nature of the attorney-client relationship, clients can fire their attorneys.
I'm just curious, would you say this is this the same law that applies if the person was an employee of a public entity such as a city or county and so forth?
You know,
they felt that there had been a betrayal of client confidence about a real estate transaction or something.
You know, I think it is. And what's interesting in the Corey versus Pierce County case, which is the only case that suggests in any way that there might be some separate rule for public entities. But in that case, Corey worked for the Pierce County prosecuting attorney, who was a separately elected person. It was the prosecuting attorney, not Pierce County, that had the right to fire Corey. The county couldn't have done anything. Separately elected prosecuting attorney with complete statutory discretion. Clearly, that's like the managing partner of a law firm.
There's a recent case that says the county council is required to use the prosecutor's services for legal advice.
Let's
assume the county council lost confidence in the advice it was receiving from a deputy prosecutor on a real estate transaction.
Yeah, I think it's clear under statute that only the prosecuting attorney can fire the deputy prosecuting attorney. It's just a statutory complex. I think it's clear in that case it was the prosecuting attorney who decided to hire Corey. It was the prosecuting attorney who allegedly made promises to Corey. It was the prosecuting attorney who lost confidence in Corey and said, "You're fired." That is really exactly
what
like.
What if this didn't involve a prosecuting attorney? What if it was a city attorney? A city attorney, I suppose, in some cases is appointed by either the mayor or the council.
Well, I'm most familiar with the city of Seattle, where the city attorney also is elected. But I would say that
appointed by the mayor.
So, I think there could be some different rules. We have a long history of civil service rules in the public sector. Again, I think the way to look at it is currently under Washington law, there is no separate rule for in-house counsel in either the public or private sector. And the plaintiff in this case is
contract enough to create a separate rule?
No, it's clear from the Belly versus Shaw case, 98 Washington 2nd at 577, that when a lawyer has his client sign a contract giving just cause discharge provisions, that contract is not enforceable because what we know is the well-established rule, clients can fire their attorneys. The question is,
what if it was a collective bargaining agreement?
It wouldn't make any difference, and that pains me to say that as basically being a union attorney, but the collective bargaining agreement can bind it. If I can have a collective bargaining agreement with my attorney employees as a managing partner of my firm and maybe bound by that, but you can't have that kind of relationship between
municipally adopted rules of civil service.
So at some point you could imagine the state Supreme Court deciding that a statute deviated from the well-established common law principle of clients not being able to fire their attorneys at any time for any reason, and you know I
so it's not an absolute. You're saying it could be subject to a statute or as we've imagined. I suppose that perhaps the firing decision is made for reasons that are overtly discriminatory in some illegal way.
Right. So what we actually get into is an interesting question.
So it's not absolute, though.
It is not. It's simply
the point that we're making here. But you're saying that it should be applied absolutely in this case, notwithstanding the existence of a contract.
What is clear now under the common law is a contract for continued employment is not enforceable by a lawyer against his client. Could that be changed by the Supreme Court? Could it be changed in the rules of professional conduct or a statute? I have no basis to say.
So your position is, and it's absolute in this circumstance, a private attorney,
right,
which you're saying, Mr. Carson
is. You just said the court could change it. Could the legislature change it, or is this within the purview of the court's administration of attorneys?
I don't have an answer to that, frankly. The relative power of the Supreme Court to adopt rules for the profession versus the legislature's ability to limit that by statute. I'm a simple man. I look at 100 years of the Supreme Court saying clients can fire their lawyers, and here's why. I do want to say the wrongful discharge fails in this case simply because there's no public policy that Mr. Carstetter identifies. King County Code protects county employees, not attorneys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honor, members of the court, my name is Brian Dahlman of the Law Offices of Judith Longquist. With me in the courtroom and on brief is Judith Longquist, and also in the courtroom are my clients, Julie and Jared Carstetter. Your Honor, the question that you asked is that whether the Guild wants to apply the ban on contracts absolutely in this case is correct, and they want to do so without an examination of the facts. The facts are is that Mr. Carstetter was an employee of the Guild. Mr. Eglitson has admitted that on the record in a different proceeding. The former Guild president has stated that he was
conceding for purposes of this hearing. We have to treat your client as their employee. So they're saying even if he is their employee, the RPC allows him to discharge at any time without cause.
Well, they can discharge the attorney-client relationship. They cannot discharge an employee in violation of a contract.
If the only duties the person performs are those of an attorney, where does that leave the parties?
Those are not the only duties that Mr. Carstetter performed. He performed that of a business manager or a business representative for the Guild, and he performed a mix of duties. The Guild was not without.
Are you saying that they should have just reclassified him?
Well, we have
in a job where he would not be giving any advice.
Your Honor, the Guild had many opportunities outside of discharging him. They could have put him on administrative leave. They could have allowed him just to do Guild duties and not legal duties. They could have put him on a home assignment. They did not have to violate his employment contract as they did here.
Is that something that we've seen in the briefs?
We have, Your Honor, and we have.
Was that considered below? I mean, in other words, was the argument made at the very beginning? Oh, okay. Don't fire him. Just put him on less legal duty. Give him a different job.
Your Honor, there isn't much of a record below, as you know. This was just simply on a motion.
Your brief in opposition to their motion, will I see that argument in any form?
You will. At Appendix 3, Mr. Carstetter's declaration identified his mix of duties.
Well, that identifies the mix of duties, but was the argument made to the court that he could have been restricted to the non-legal duties described in his declaration?
We identified his mix of duties. We did not necessarily mention that he could have been put on a home assignment.
Probably we're going to disregard that argument, so maybe you should move on to something else.
Well, Your Honor, I'm raising that because the court is allowed to consider hypothetical situations, given the fact that the limited record in this was dismissed on a motion to dismiss.
Well, that's why they're conceding as an employee.
Correct. So, He was an employee. He had a lengthy tenure. The Guild entered contract after contract with Mr. Karstetter, and Mr. Iglitzen's own firm represented Mr. Karstetter at the time he was under one of those contracts.
That's all interesting history, but it doesn't get us to what we need to decide, which is there a public policy that trumps the contract in the interest of allowing people to discharge attorneys?
Your Honor, the public policy or the argument to be made is that contract law in Washington specifically trumps the ethical rule for a client to discharge.
How do you reconcile the Belli case with that argument?
In Belli versus Shaw, that case cannot be squared because that was a fee-sharing arrangement between lawyers and clients, and there was an execution of a second fee agreement. It did not involve an employment situation as it does here.
Wasn't Mr. Belli arguing he was still an attorney for his client, notwithstanding the second contract?
He was.
And didn't the court take the position that the second contract discharged Mr. Belli?
It did, Your Honor.
Didn't it say the client was within its rights to discharge Mr. Belli, and it didn't have to have cause, and it didn't have to use any particular form?
And I agree with you, Your Honor. A client can sever the attorney-client relationship, but it cannot ignore a contractual arrangement it has with an employee. We need to be able to enforce and rely on contracts in Washington State. And the reason that we're contending that, Your Honor, is because we've cited case law to you in multiple cases. For instance, the Chisholm case, which dealt with an in-house counsel like we have here today, where Mr. Karstetter worked in-house for the Guild, Mr. Chisholm worked in-house.
But Mr. Chisholm resigned, and the question was what he was entitled to by way of compensation, not whether the employer could discharge Mr. Chisholm.
Correct, but the same analysis applies, Your Honor, because he had an employment agreement that he relied on when making that claim for compensation.
Well, I mean, the point is, though, it seems undisputed that if there's something that's owing to Mr. Karstetter, then he gets it, right? I mean, it's not, but it seems like the issue is can they be forced to continue to receive advice from him? Specific performance of a contract.
And, Your Honor, again,
somebody who's agreed to be an opera singer, but, they've just lost their voice.
Right. But if that employee has a one-year or a five-year contract, that contract is still enforceable for that opera singer.
Here you're seeking compensation for the time frame for which Mr. Karstetter did not provide services. There's no claim that he wasn't paid for the time he actually did act as the Guild's counsel, is there?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor.
So this is for future services he would have performed if, from your perspective, the Guild hadn't breached its contract with Mr. Karstetter.
Correct. And as Division noted in the Chisholm case, a decision against an employment contract would cast doubt on the wage negotiations of scores of Washington attorneys and not just Mr. Chisholm.
So if Mr. Karstetter were here for back wages, Chisholm would help him.
Well, it helps him because he has an employment contract. And if we are to ignore employment contracts between client employers and attorney employees, we would cast into doubt every single employment contract in Washington State, whether it be an Amazon employee, whether it be a Microsoft attorney.
How so?
Because the employer could ignore its contractual relationship with the employee.
Would you have to identify something like the RPC before you could do that, though? Is there some ethical code adopted by the court for Amazon employees that is analogous to this?
Your Honor, if there's an attorney employee working for a charitable foundation, under the Guild's request of this court, all that it would need to do was cite one RPC 1.16, and it could ignore its contractual requirement to that attorney employee.
For future compensation. It would have to pay it for the services provided to date.
Just as any other Washington employee would get paid for their services right up until their last day of employment. But we need to be...
any other Washington employee isn't an attorney. Isn't there something unique to the attorney-client relationship that's at issue here?
There is, Your Honor, but we've cited case law where courts should not be empower employers to ignore other sources of law where employees have rights. The contractual.
Well, I guess it seems like maybe the question is, I mean, should this kind of contract ever, was it unwise on possibly both parties to ever enter into this contract with the idea that there ever could be a guarantee of wages no matter what?
Well, where Mr. Karstetter provided services at below market rates and that he had a reliable contract, that was a bargain for exchange. We've also cited the General Dynamics case, Your Honor.
I don't think the adequacy of the consideration is being challenged. The question is, as a matter of public policy, should we tell lawyers, you don't have a guaranteed term of employment, you always are subject to termination because you're a special quality of employee, you're an attorney who has privileged communications and has other things cloaking the relationship with the employer that, as a result, deny the attorney of the right to bargain for a guaranteed term of employment.
And that's what you would be telling every Washington attorney employee if you granted the guild's point of view here, Your Honor. Which,
what's wrong with that?
Well,
as long as everybody understands those are the rules.
Because attorneys are employees too, number one. And number two, there are other sources of law that employers could ignore then by building this construct, such as the Consumer Protection Act, the Washington Law Against Discrimination, whistleblower protections, the blacklisting statute, sick and family leave regulations, consumer law. We should not allow employers to ignore their obligations, whether it be in contract or other sources of law, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
You reserved four.
I did. Thank you.
All right. Okay.
I want to first, by returning to, I believe, with Judge Leach's question, I realize that many, many cities in Washington hire outside counsel on a contract basis to provide them legal advice. And, yes, clearly they're entitled to discharge those counsel.
A number of cities also have the mayor have authority to appoint. And I think that was Judge Becker's question.
And clearly the mayor would then have the authority to terminate the relationship with that attorney if the mayor lost confidence in that attorney.
No matter what contractual protections there might be.
Correct. If that's a classic attorney-client relationship.
Well, I mean, as I see it then, like you say, you have a simple principle. So do they. Their principle is contract. Yours is the RPC.
But frankly.
All right. But, I mean, the point is their argument is this. The way to harmonize this is honor the contract. You don't have to take advice from Mr. Karstetter anymore, but pay him for all the time that you bargained to pay him.
Yeah, that's ingenious, but it's not what the state Supreme Court has ever said. They've repeatedly, for example, in this case, the guild, and it's in the record, fired Mr. Karstetter, hired a new law firm. He sued the new law firm for tortious interference by stealing his job. There's no business agent. There are no non-attorney employees.
If he adopted Judge Becker's proposal, Mr. Belli would have gotten his contingency fee.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So to me, the only interesting question is the one raised by counsel at the very end about what about the Washington Law Against Discrimination or the CPA. And all I can say on that, because of the record before us, is that the only source of a public policy other than the right to contract, which is a dead issue, it's been resolved for 100 years, is the King County Code, which Mr. Karstetter alleges somehow protected him in the actions which he claimed got him fired. But the King County Code protects county employees, suggests that county employees can do certain things. King County Code doesn't protect an attorney who voluntarily responds to an oral request for confidential client information and turns it over to a third party.
Mr. Karstetter alleged that he was fired because he was of African-American heritage?
Exactly. And the Washington Law Against Discrimination has other, this gets back to the could things be changed by statute. Washington Law Against Discrimination says that is a paramount concern of the state of Washington. Would the Supreme Court decide to carve out an exception to the general rule for violations, just like there's a federal case that was cited where they say Sarbanes-Oxley can apply if an attorney were to be fired for reporting to the government. There could be exceptions for certain kinds of public policies. What there's not is an exception for contract.
Absolute rule again. I think we did this on your
draft. Right.
Not an absolute rule, but the exceptions we're imagining don't apply in your case.
I'm sorry, imagining?
We're imagining possible exceptions,
right,
but none of them apply.
But the imagining in this case has to be based on the actual complaint, which is I was protected by the King County Code for disclosing to this investigative body secrets of my client. And because the King County Code clearly doesn't create a policy that says if you're an attorney and you get a phone call from some third party asking for documents regarding credit card use of your client, there's a public policy saying you need to turn that over to the third party. If there was a dominant, overwhelming public policy, like Sarbanes-Oxley at the federal level or the Washington Law Against Discrimination, it would be a different case. And I'm not, as I was clear in my briefs, I'm not suggesting that you could never say an attorney's employment rights are protected with a client. I'm saying under this complaint, what Mr. Karstetter alleges he did does not implicate any public policy. And frankly, Mr. Dolman was clear, his public policy is the right of contract. And that we know because, as Judge Becker just said, attorneys are not like other employees. Attorneys are unique. There's a unique personal confidential relationship between clients and attorneys. And the attorney can't draft a contract to get around it by giving the attorney lifetime employment. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And that concludes.